following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 234, recorded on Thursday, January 18th, 2018. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
Coming up, 5 exoplanet system discovered thanks to citizen scientists. Plus a sighting, along with our picks and warnings. Before all that, though, our question.
Dave?
Huh? Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
What famous UFO encounter or alien abduction do you think should be made into a movie or TV program, and why? You got your Roswell. You got your Rendlesheim. You got the Pennsylvania one. I forget the name of that one. Remember that
I think
one?
It's called the Pennsylvania one.
Yeah. If you can think of one that you know of, that you think would make a great movie or TV show, what would it be?
I think Rendlesham, just because it involves the U.S. and the U.K.
Yeah. And I'm really surprised that nobody has made it into, like, some kind of live-action thing yet.
Yeah, I could see, like, the possibility of, you know, maybe a portion of the movie is from the U.S. side and the other portion is from the U.K. side, and, you know, kind of like almost somewhat non-linear in fashion. I think that would be kind of interesting to see how, like, the different militaries would have handled things differently. It seemed like the U.K. side was a bit more open about what had happened versus the U.S.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to see that dramatized.
Okay. I like where you're going with that. It's always good when you can picture it in your head, and I can picture your idea in my head. Okay, I have to say Roswell. But actually, Roswell. You know what? Roswell has been made into TV shows and movies before. So I'm going to go with the sighting that I brought up a couple episodes ago, I believe. It's the one in Canada where the guy was out. He was mineral hunting or something like that with his dog, and he stumbled into a clearing and saw a UFO and walked up to it. And then some exhaust came out, hit him in the chest, and then it took off, and he had some symptoms later on of, like, radiation sickness. I think that would make for a great movie or TV show.
Okay.
I don't have any particular reason. I just know that it's got interesting details. It's not just a regular sighting, right? It's got a physical aspect to it. He actually sees inside the craft, and he's somebody that didn't really know anything about aliens. So he's a pretty credible witness.
Sure.
All right.
Huh.
Producers in Hollywood, go.
In the news.
Occasionally we'll talk about exoplanets, and yes, it doesn't include aliens, but that doesn't mean that there isn't possibly, you know, a possibility of life there. And I found another story about exoplanets, and in fact, it's citizen scientists who discovered a grouping and a whole system of exoplanets. And this comes to us from space.com. Here we go. A family of 4 planets orbiting a distant star was discovered last April, so it would have been April of 2017, with the help of citizen scientists around the world. In a new paper, researchers reveal some fascinating features of this alien solar system, including the presence of a 5th planet. The planetary system is called K2-138. and it is the home of at least 5 sub-Neptune planets, meaning that they are between the size of Earth and that of Neptune, according to the new study. The planets all orbit extremely close to their parent star, even closer than Mercury orbits the Sun. What's more, the paper suggests that these planets may have formed further away from their parent star than they are now, and then journeyed inward together in an exceptionally calm manner.
Move along. Nothing to see here.
We kind of like this guy over here. Let's get closer and find out what this is all about.
Yeah, we'll follow him for a while. It'll be good.
He seems pretty cool. The Exoplanet Explorers program got a big boost in publicity 2 weeks after it launched, when it was featured on the Australia Broadcasting Company's television series Stargazing Live, co-hosted by celebrity physicist Brian Cox.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty freaking cool. For 3 consecutive nights, within 48 hours of the program's debut, more than 10,000 people had participated in Exoplanet Explorers and classified over 2 million systems, according to the statement. Some of the major findings reported in the new paper are the discovery of a 5th planet and hints of a possible 6th planet in the data. The star at the center of this system is slightly smaller and cooler than our sun. While the innermost planet might be rocky like Earth, the other 4 known planets are gaseous like Neptune.
Who farted? Oh, those other planets. That's who.
Yes, they are. They've eaten a lot of broccoli, and I got nothing.
I'm so juvenile.
Well, you know, there's no shame in it. Farts equals funny. There's no shame in that. I think it's really cool that citizen scientists are, you know, getting involved and are putting out a body of work that is overall just, I mean, helping further the search for extraterrestrial life. And whether that's microbial or intelligent, whatever, exoplanets are really the thing that we're looking at right now. Because who knows when this planet's going to go and we need to get the heck off.
Yeah.
But, you know, it also helps us better understand how life started here and, you know, better find our place in the universe. It's just an extension of scientific discovery that we've done as human beings all along. So I just think it was really cool that a whole group of people around the world were a part of this program, and they cataloged 2 million systems.
Wow. That's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Within 2 days, and it was 10,000 people that were a part of it, so they all pooled their data together to put this information. It's just, it's amazing.
That's how we're going to find Earth 2. You know, that's the way it's going to happen. It's not going to be a bunch of scientists in a room. It's going to be the power of the people. Now, how do they do it? Did they have data that they just looked over?
You know, that's a very good question. Let me take a closer look at the story as to how they gathered the data. I trimmed it for time and content because the article is very long. And if you go to the show notes, you can read the entire story. Okay, so this was information used from the K2 mission, which observed like 280,000 stars in 3 years. So they were pouring over data that had already been accumulated using the Kepler telescope data. The software that can kind of sort through the initial data and select stars that might be, you know, home to some planets. And then they sort through that and try to come up with, you know, how many planets are there. And it's really, really kind of interesting. So they've really been kind of crowdsourcing the data. And this was a part of that particular crowdsourcing event that was done.
It was just a bunch of number crunchers, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. That, I don't think I could do that. I couldn't, my eyes couldn't handle it. My antsiness couldn't handle it. I couldn't be in a room just looking at pure numbers all day or whatever form it takes. I just couldn't do it.
It takes a certain kind of person, and there's no shame in saying that you're not that person.
No, I'm not. I'm not that person, Bradley.
And there's no shame in that.
Could you do it?
No.
Okay.
I might be able to do it for a while, but no. I don't think I could do it for a long period of time. And it would really kind of depend on how that data looked. I mean, if it's all spreadsheety, I might fall asleep while I'm doing
it. What'd you say? Spread what?
Spreadsheety.
Just making sure. Just double checking.
I'm making up words. Yeah, I didn't say an explicative. No.
Those sheet hole places in the world? Yeah. Okay.
That's only if you put them in a 3-ring binder. You have to put sheet holes in them to put them in the binder, so you can collect that data.
Nice. If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks, or click on the icons at gncast.com.
If you enjoy this podcast, The Alien Invasion, and would like to get involved and be our partner, you know, do more than just subscribe or listen, you can be a partner with us by going to gncasts.com/support and then click on the Patreon link. We have different levels, and they all have rewards. $1, $3, and $5 a month. And we're not talking per episode or per week. This is per month. Almost anybody could afford $1 a month. And you could even get your name mentioned on the air, get a bonus podcast, or even have a whole message read by one of us jokers. You know, consider it like a commercial. Like, you got something coming up, you got something you want to get some eyeballs on or some eardrums on, become a partner at the $5 level, and that will get you a commercial on all of our shows. So again, go to gncasts.com/support and become our partner. Partner.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
So this is something that somebody saw once that may or may not be, you know, a UFO, flying saucer, extraterrestrial craft. This is our sighting section. And this week's comes to us from the past. The far past, actually. Pretty far. September 1st, 1974, Langenberg, Saskatchewan, Canada. Saskatchewan's up there north of North Dakota, for reference.
Thank you.
All right. I love how this is written, too, so hang on. The skies were gray and threatening, but Edwin Furr was on his swather in a field of canola. I don't know what a swather is. Do you know what a swather is?
What?
A swather. S-W-A-T-H-E-R. It's some kind of machinery that a farmer would use. Moving up a small incline, he glanced up and spied something made of metal in the grass. His first thought was that someone was playing a joke on him or had dumped junk in the old slough. Slough? 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 S-L-O-U-G-H? Slough?
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 I don't know.
Slough?
As the swather.
Slough?
A lot of S words here. As the swather moved up the incline, the slough, or slough, came into full view. I'm sure it's just a field. The metallic something was one of five machines rotating rapidly and hovering just above the grass. Fuhrer, startled, stopped his swather, climbed down and took a few steps toward the hovering machines. Then, overcome with fear, he stopped and began slowly to ease back to his idling swather. The machines continued to hover and spin, then slowly lifted about 100 feet above the ground. They maneuvered into an echelon formation and rose at a much greater speed. Each vented a brief puff of smoke and in seconds disappeared over the horizon. At the controls of his swather, Fuhrer was almost paralyzed with fright and barely able to put the machine into gear. At lunch, he was unable to eat. When he inspected the site where the strange visitors had been, he saw five circular depressions. Most of the tall grass was pressed down and in places was twisted, as it would be by a spinning object. The circles were exactly 11 feet in diameter, and there was unflattened grass in the center. Fuhrer said the mystery machines were made of what looked like stainless steel, but had a brushed finish. Each was about 5 feet high at the peak of its dome-like structure. There were no windows or portholes, no antennas or other projecting parts, except something resembling a short exhaust pipe, the source of the vapor the objects emitted as they rose through the overcast. The Center for UFO Studies in Illinois sent a specialist to the farm, and he found no reason to dispute Fuhrer's report. Corporal Ron Morier, Canada's probably French, Morier of the RCMP concluded that the five circles were caused by something exerting what had to be heavy exhaust or air pressure. Whatever was in there came out of the air and departed the same way as far as I could tell. So, there you go. 1974.
It is a slough, which is a swamp.
That was my first thought. My first pronunciation thought was slough. It's one of those words that doesn't look like the way it is spelled. It doesn't, the way it's spelled doesn't look like the way it should be spelled, the way it's said. you can just say, shut up, Dave, and I will shut up, and we'll continue.
That's all right.
Like nothing happened.
But I like you, Dave.
So this is probably one of the first cases of a crop circle, I'm guessing. Because crop circles weren't really a thing until like the 1980s, right?
I don't know.
We could look that up.
I think that that's...
crop circles, Wikipedia.
The term was first coined in the early 80s by Colin Andrews, yeah.
Okay. When was the first instance, though, of a crop circle?
Well, a number of crop circles has a substantially increased from the 1970s to current times.
Okay, so his may be one of the first crop circles.
Nope. Actually, 1678 news pamphlet, The Mowing Devil, is claimed some seriologists to be the first depiction of a crop circle.
Okay.
Crop circle researcher Jim Schnabel does not consider it to be a historical precedent because it describes the stalks being cut rather than bent. Okay. Mm-hmm. 1686. British naturalist Robert Plott reported on rings or arcs of mushrooms. See fairy rings. And 1880 letter to the editor of Nature by amateur scientist John Rad Capron describes how a recent storm had created several circles of flattened crops in a field.
Hmm.
So it's potentially prior to the 20th century.
But they really stepped up in the 1970s, 1980s.
1932 would be one of the first described as a circle in which the barley was lodged or beaten down while the interior area was slightly mounded up.
All right, so there you go. That is our sighting this week. If you have a sighting of your own, we would love to hear it. We've had some before. aliens@gncasts.com. Call or voicemail number 805-328-3966. Or hop onto our website, gncasts.com, and record a voice message. We'll get it, and we'll get it on the air. And we'll get it on the podcast, not on the air. Podcast is what we're doing here. All right. That's your sighting.
We're the Else Nerds.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockde, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Let's do our picks and warnings, shall we?
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making...
I picked a TV show, which is available, I believe, on Amazon Prime Video. But I'm not sure, because here in Canada, it's on the Space Network. It's called Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. And the episode that I picked for my pick is called Human Is. And if you haven't seen the show, I'm going to spoil it. And Brad, I'm sorry, because you may get a chance to watch this someday. Maybe you have already. I don't know. But there's no way around me not spoiling the end, because it involves aliens, right? So that's the big reveal at the end. And we couldn't do it unless I actually spoiled it. So there, I already spoiled it.
That's all right.
So... Electric Dreams is an anthology series. These episodes are all based upon a Philip K. Dick story, be it a complete book or short stories, although I think it is all based on short stories. And the Electric Dreams part comes from Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, which was the original story for Blade Runner. Is that it?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll read the synopsis from Wikipedia, and then I'll kind of put it in my own words. Mission director Vera Hurick is trapped in a loveless marriage with military hero Colonel Silas Hurick, played by Bryan Cranston. Silas returns to the planet of Rexor 4 to obtain a substance needed to process Earth's toxic atmosphere, because they're running out of air, basically. The atmosphere has become so toxic that people can't breathe. They can't get oxygen, really, from it anymore. Okay, so he comes under attack from the local Rexorians. He'd gone before... But then he has to go back because this is like their last-ditch effort to get this the substance to help Earth regain its oxygen. So, okay, so they come under attack. They think that everybody's dead, that they got the whole crew. When their ship returns on autopilot, Silas has apparently survived. And Vera finds him uncharacteristically kind and considerate. So, beginning of the episode, it was, you know, he did his thing, she did her thing. They didn't really sleep together at the same time. They didn't show any passion for each other. So he comes back from this mission, and he's like a changed person. Red flag. But she apparently really didn't... pay attention. At the end, the couple's arrested by the state, who believe that Silas has been taken over by a Rexorian consciousness. It's a really cool story. It's sad because that could be us, you know, in the future sometime with no atmosphere left. It's, you know, Earth's last remaining occupants. You know, they're struggling to survive. It's their last ditch effort to get what they need. And he goes off and becomes basically taken over by this alien creature. She almost accepts that because it changed him. It's the husband that she always wanted, or it's the husband that she had before, and he's back now. And there was some sex, I'm not going to lie. There's a couple of sex scenes. Before he takes off, she goes into like a seedy district of where they live. Mm-hmm. And it's basically she goes to a BDSM club and gets it on with a couple of people. And I love Canadian TV because they don't censor very much at all. They don't censor swearing. They don't censor nudity. So, yeah, there's that. And then when he comes back, they show them doing it.
You make it sound so seedy. Doing it.
Doing it. Doing it, doing it, doing it right. That's the song.
Doing it well.
So, yeah, I highly recommend this show. I highly recommend this episode. They've had a couple of episodes, or we've only seen three so far. Nah, four, I think. And one or two were kind of like, eh, it's okay. But for the most part, they're really good. If you like things like Black Mirror, you'll love this show as well. So, again, Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. The episode is called Human Is. And I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 flying saucers.
What?
Yep. Uh-huh.
That is amazing.
So if you want to get the link to know more about this episode of Electric Dreams, you can find it in the show notes. And you can enjoy it as much as I did.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going to gncast.com/subscribe. Or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
So that's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories that we covered on this episode, click on the links in the show notes. We'd like to thank Monkey Warhol for giving us our intro song. It's called Alien Syndrome. You can find it and more of his music at monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com. Also, thanks to Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. You can find out more about him and his stuff at thecaravel.net, thecaravel.net. And also thanks to Ben Olson.
Ben!
Thank you for recording our disclaimer audio at the very start of the episode. Go to benolson.com. to find out more about him and what he does. So before we get out of here, final thought, Brad, what do you got? Anything?
The Predator movie is coming out August of this year.
Mm.
It is directed by Shane Black. So my money is on something happening. It happening over Christmas, or Christmas will be mentioned.
Okay. Is that a thing with his movies?
That is a thing with his movies.
Wasn't he an actor in the original Predator?
He was.
Cool. And what else has he done? I forget.
Oh, God. He did Lethal Weapon. He did Iron Man 3, the Marvel one-shot Agent Carter, which was the short that was the bonus on the Iron Man 3 DVD. He did RoboCop 3, which we'll forget about. Hunt for Red October, The Last Boy Scout, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 1. He directed the original Predator. He started as an actor in Night of the Creeps.
Ooh. So it's all coming back around again. He's bringing the franchise home, basically.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think that's very... And he's come so far as a director. He's a really good director. Oh, and he did one of my favorite movies in 2005, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. If you get the chance, it's Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer. And it is a great, great modern noir film.
Is it
is amazing.
Buddy cop movie? right?
No, it is not. Okay.
All right, that's one of the movies that we have to look forward to this year. There are plenty more where that came from. All right. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.